In 62, I think we were coming off a decade of maybe focusing on ourselves a little bit after the war. The 50s were a time when we got our country going again. We had a can-do attitude to the world. We had some real successes with the Marshall Plan, but then we were starting to get our nose bloodied by the Cold War and by the growth of communism around the world, the terror of communism in our own society with the McCarthy hearings and things like that. And I think a film like this is trying to deal with the 50s worldview in the early 60s when some of this stuff has started to crack up a little bit. And these people are making a great effort to show us hunger in the world in a rather stark way. And it's a way that we may or may not find acceptable today. So it's a 1962 film made with the backing of Lutheran World Relief, but also mostly Church World Service, I think, took the lead on this particular film. So let's try it now. Thank you, Dorothy. I'll do two 15 or 14 minute sections and we'll stop for some discussion. I'll just read the thing. Through Lutheran World Action, our church helps people in more than 80 lands. This film gives examples of why and how we serve.
There are over 3 billion people in the world. Most of them are hungry. They get up hungry, they go to bed hungry. They are born hungry, they die hungry. They are hungry for food. They are hungry for shelter. They are hungry for health. They are hungry for homeland. They are hungry for freedom and justice and peace. Even deeper than the hunger of their bodies is the sacred hunger of their ambitious minds.
Independence.
And in the process, the fires of tribal hatred, long thought to have been quenched, are seen to have been only smoldering and waiting to burst into flame again. As some Africans flee before the conflagration, others, absorbed in the political struggle, have neglected to plant their crops, care for their cattle, keep the wheels of their industry turning, and now find themselves hungry in the dawn of the day of national sovereignty. Once again, the pattern of our time is traced along the roadway of Central Africa, the endless trek of the refugee in flight from terror, in search of safety. Wounds of this conflict have become open sores, scars in the body of mankind which will not heal. Calcutta is such a place. 3.5 million uprooted people crowd its streets and courts and alleyways. The Sialdah railway station has become a refugee camp, a railway terminal that for many thousands has become a terminus for life itself. Journeys which began in East Pakistan, inspired by some inarticulate hope, have ended here in unspeakable despair. In spite of the brave efforts of governments, the problem remains unsolved. Those who have lost hope wait for they know not what, without meaning. Life goes on. What were meant to be transit camps, like the one at Bagjula, become permanent settlements. Hands long idle have lost aptitude for work. And where the refugee sometimes loses his capacity to settle and wanders off, he knows not where. In the midst of these deserts of misery and squalor, there are symbols of hope. In the lands from which these people come, and in the lands in which they have settled, the Christian church has been planted. 150 years of missionary work established the church in these lands. Some of the finest young people of the West have burned out or worked out their lives among these people. The faithful of many generations have paid their dimes and quarters and dollars to send them and support them. More than these people realize, and more than the people of the West appreciate, the preaching of the gospel with its message of a loving providence and a kingdom of compassion, of a divine care of the individual and of the sacredness of childhood, has inspired the ideals of social and political revolution which the people of these nations strive for. The church remains among them in their struggle, in an open-air school in a refugee colony, building on the hope which never disappoints, a better tomorrow. The church is there, obeying the Lord's command to feed the hungry. Squalor breed disease, and especially tuberculosis. the masses of these people cough their lives away. Among those who have been infected, a program of restoration and cure is undertaken with an explanation to the patient's family of those safeguards needed to preserve future health. The familiar sight of a mobile X-ray unit is a reminder of the Church's concern for the well-being of the family of man. It is because of such concern by individuals and congregations within the world Christian community that medical care is received and people nursed back temporarily to health. But only temporarily, for the most expert medical skill is defeated again and again when the patient returns to his shack and his scanty diet. The hunger for life persists, and the struggle to satisfy it continues. But it will not last long, only for 36 years. For that is the average expectation of life in some of these lands. Food, contributed by Americans, is offloaded beneath the hillside apartments of Hong Kong. But do not think merely because you have the means to feed these people that you are entitled to their gratitude. Rather, you should be thankful that you yourself have the means to help. The new nation of Pakistan may boast great cities like Karachi or this one, Dhaka, in East Pakistan, with fine buildings and wide streets. But the land is a land of villages. It is understandable why villagers by the thousands have fled unrewarding fields and swarm into the cities to live in the streets. Now they must be wooed back to the countryside again. The gifts of nature to Pakistan have been too long wasted. Now they must be cultivated again, cherished and husbanded. Those who live on the land could win a better life for themselves if only they knew how.
Truths and superstitions must be overcome through education.
Pakistan is a nation struggling to be born, and the church is helping it to fulfill its nationhood. In an atomic age, the Korean War seemed but a skirmish. In any other age, it would have been regarded as full-scale war. The rice bowls of South Korea were emptied by that waste that was war. Even now, millions of hungry and the homeless of the world are paying the price of that absence of war that we call peace. They are bruised for the inequities of the East and the West. Such are the people of Korea. Some of the miserable victims of war sought to make a home along the Han River, near the garbage and rubbish disposal dumps. They made some kind of living in sorting the junk and selling it in a nearby city. Sometimes the river, as if disgusted with a squalor on its banks, rises in anger and washes it all away in tempestuous floods. Those who survive return to the river banks, for the receding waters leave a fresh supply of junk to be sorted and sold. Among these Korean refugees, the church exists. Not only the church in praise and prayer and worship, but the church in service and action. Here in Korea, the word of the gospel is being matched with the action of the gospel. New houses replace old shacks. The churches of America helped to establish a community center at Unamdong, where children are guided by missionary personnel working in partnership with Korean leaders. Here, then, is more than concern. Here is compassion in action. In the long run, it will be with the acquiring of skills through training that the youth of Korea will be prepared to assume their normal occupations as home builders. Bodies in which hunger and exposure have bred the seeds of death must be healed. After the floods comes typhoid, but typhoid can be cured. It can even be prevented. Men know how to do both. If only there were enough to share the knowledge, and if only there were enough people who would provide means for its application. Tuberculosis can be detected, and if detected early enough, cured. Out from Severance Hospital, the ambassadors of health make their daily journeys into the shack villages, carrying with them that which will heal and bring people back to life. On the horizon of Korea, there hangs a great question mark. What will become of these people who bear the chastisement of the peace of East and West? What is the future of a nation through whose heart runs the nervous frontier of East and West? Children play on Korean fields. Left by the receding tide of war were dangerous toys. Grenades, bullets, shells, and hidden landmines. Some children were blown to pieces, others maimed for life, a worse fate, if there are not enough people to care. Perhaps there is more here than the restoration of a shattered limb. Perhaps when a child's leg is amputated, he loses something else as well. That which also must be built back into his life is something of courage, confidence, and assurance that he will be one with his fellows, able to live with them. Faith has its place here, and hope, those special ingredients which the gospel brings with its ministry of mercy, a ministry which insists that every child in every land is entitled to play. ¶¶
changes.
The first section, I'm going to skip the next bit, which is about Hong Kong, another one of the flashpoints between East and West in the 50s. Cold War trouble spots. You've seen Pakistan and India, the formation of the nation of Pakistan, and then now the leftovers of the Korean War. What are some of the things that jumped out at you there in the worldview, the reasoning, the way it's presented, as well as the story that they're covering itself? Whether they be images or some of the narrative.
I flinch sometimes at choice of words, whether junk or squalor or things. I don't know. I thought maybe those words weren't as loaded then, or they seem.
At one point, the river is rising up and to sweep away the squalor on its banks.
Yeah.
They're in the scene in Pakistan where the agriculturalist is training people, there was a certain amount of arrogance that the land could sustain 3 crops a year. It doesn't. I don't know the facts, but it seems to me that I don't think that land can sustain that kind of.
And how is it that we're led to believe it may be able to do that?
Artificial fertilizers,
right? But also the presence of the all-knowing white man.
Yeah, I think they said that these people must be taught this, to do this and that, how to live.
For what audience was this originally intended?
For you 30 years ago.
For me 30 years ago. Yeah. Because one of the things that I noticed was that there was almost a reluctance to say anything substantive about the church and about the gospel that was mentioned a couple times, but often there was these code words used to replace that. For instance, I hardly ever hear anybody these days talk about providence in place of God. And then there was a period. There was one section there where they said something about their hunger of their bodies and the hungers of this. To say nothing of the hunger of a ambitious mind, and where did they get this out? I mean, it wasn't even soul that they mentioned, it was just an ambitious mind.
Right.
I thought that was fine.
One thing I was kind of pleasantly surprised about as I listened to them, however, was there was very little recrimination on one side versus the other side. There was recognition that there was a shared stupidity in the war, and that these are the victims of contests that have nothing to do with these people, basically, on both sides. And I thought that was a positive thing about that.
Right.
You weren't trying to blame the communists for this, or you weren't necessarily trying to blame American imperialism for this, but the stupidity of both of those things in conflict creates this terrible.
I think they're trying to not to be too political and not make it into a kind of an anti-red thing. At the same time, though, they're suggesting that these people want to be free, and I think want to be sort of like us.
I think it presumes American imperialism.
Yeah. I'm not even sure it's that conscious of
it. It presumes that it's there.
Right. Dorothy?
I think we might find some disjunction between the words and the images. Because once in a while they use words like justice and self-determination and give them the skills to help themselves and all of that. What you really see on the screen are the are people in desperate need and only in desperate need. There's no justice-making activity on the screen. There might be a few words about it, but I wonder if some of these images would have been familiar missionary fundraising-type images even much earlier than this. In other words, the thinking's starting to change, but not the basic images.
Maybe, yeah. Some of the quotes which jumped out at me, which underlie some of your points now you've made, at the right at the beginning, these people padding aimlessly. You know, it's like I said, wait a minute. You know, refugees are padding aimlessly, knowing not where they go, and they follow a man who goes down his path. Do not think that because you have the means to feed these people, you are entitled to their gratitude. Be thankful you have the means. Well, is that okay? Should we vote true and true or false? Or
maybe
have a little quiz on the narrator. One of the ones I put on the board over there was, those who could lead a better life, if only they knew how. What you pointed out about the place of outside teaching. And that's a difficult one, because there is a good place for outside teaching. On the other hand, what really strikes me when I watch this now compared to the methodology of development and relief work today is there's a lot less faith that we can go over there and do anything for them. We have to go over and do something with them if it's going to last. And the idea of an intervention which does some good for the moment but doesn't really make a difference in the long term is a big, big deal and a big change in mentality, I think, for this kind of work.
They seem to talk about that, but yet, as someone else said, the images were still obvious. Of the intervention and of the
right.
The benevolent white force.
Did you get this one? The church exists not only for prayer and praise, but for service and action. That hasn't changed, I think. The word of the gospel is being matched with the action of the gospel in Korea there. And then a very prophetic line. What is the future? Talking about Korea. What is the future of a nation through whose heart runs the nervous frontier of East and West? That's Korea, newly divided between North and South Korea, and Korea still divided between North and South Korea. And the countries where I was talking about last night, and which I'll show that film later tonight, Angola, exactly the same thing, whose heart is nervously divided between the nervous frontier of East and West. Cambodia, Afghanistan, Nicaragua, some of the real disasters and dilemmas and catastrophes of our century are those who happen to find themselves on that fault line between East and West.
We didn't hear their names.
Pardon?
We didn't get their names or their stories.
The people?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Their own stories. Unlike the other video that you showed.
Exactly. Yeah, I really noticed that too. And that we speak for them.
Mm-hmm.
In the way it's presented, we speak for them. Did you see the kids with the landmines from Korea?
Yeah.
Not a new problem.
Part of the problem too is when we just give a handout, it makes them feel like we're so superior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they need to get the rest of the know-how and the gospel with it. If it's just giving them, we've even had some here at Holden who from Africa
mm-hmm.
really resent that we're better than they are.
Right.
Because we have it, and they feel they don't like that. Mm-hmm. And it's understandable why they don't like that. That's just giving them without any mm-hmm. help to help themselves, too.
Mm-hmm.
How much trust on our part is there in something of this nature?
Yeah.
We're not trusting them to be their own guides.
Right.
We're not training individuals of Korean descent to be, or Koreans to be able to work with their own people.
Mm-hmm.
We come in to.
Yeah. To be said for that film, that was said
mm-hmm.
in the video.
Yeah, in a limited way, I think.
But it was articulated.
Yeah. It's actually a couple steps further, because it's not that we train them to do it themselves. We don't even know what the right way is unless we listen very, very carefully and work it out, perhaps as a participant, but certainly not as the leading force, I think. One of the books I've got in the bookstore for these 2 weeks I'm here is called Jamket, about two Christian doctors in India who Lutheran World Relief has the incredible good fortune to have as partners. And they have been visited by the health ministers of 90 countries, the health departments, and sometimes the health minister of 90 countries, trying to understand why they've been so successful. And it's because of a really down-to-earth demonstration of this principle that they put their faith in the people, not in the technology, not in their own know-how, but in the people. And the very lowest of society have risen up and changed the face of this region of India. And I'm going to talk about that in a couple sessions from now, later in the week. I'd like to continue with it to show you something on Africa and then come back for a little bit more discussion. If we could have the lights again. I'll fast forward through... Hong Kong here. Okay, watch Hong Kong fast now. Just went back to China this week. These people were there because the communists had taken over in China, of course. And many people flooded to Hong Kong to this British prop territory, and it's been prospering after it pulled itself out of the initial refugee crisis. You heard they worked hard in Hong Kong.
They were fast too.
In this sequence, they make a very explicit contrast between the shanty towns on the hill and then the seminary of a campus of a Christian seminary. Sort of as a physical way to show a fire that swept through the hillside at shanty towns. People lining up to get food from... Okay, I think we're done.
...of the hungry and homeless. At one point during the Congo uprising, 200 Baluba tribesmen from Kasai were dying of starvation per day. Congo's cry for help sounded across the world. Peoples, governments, the United Nations, and churches of every land and confession answered the call. A jet from New York brought hope for the future in the skill of a doctor, and food for the future in its cargo of young chicks, both sent by the churches of America. The churches and missions already were in Congo, and some of them found a unity in action which they had failed to find in years of witness to the same gospel. They were traveling back through the centuries to a land whose culture and national life was being modernized overnight. The call for help was not only for food, but for teachers, for builders, and doctors. A new kind of partnership was born. Implementation given to ideals long expressed. Trucks filled with foodstuffs sped to fill the empty cups of hungry children. An entire city of tents was given by European churches in a new expression of ecumenical partnership, interdenominational, international, interracial.
These are the kind of pictures Africans don't enjoy seeing of themselves.
But the flow of refugees has not stopped. Congo had enough problems of its own. But when rebellion flared up in neighboring Angola, thousands of Angolans flooded across the Congo border. This crippled African traveled many painful miles, showing two blind men the way to safety.
The second one's a woman, actually.
To relieve a disaster they were powerless to prevent, and which all too soon they will forget. Planes which brought the food brought the doctors to stand by their already overworked colleagues. A flying doctor's service already established by the missions was extended to bring aid to otherwise inaccessible areas of need. Much of this relief work was only possible because the church was already there. Mission hospitals, long established, were prepared for emergency action. The hospital at Kempesi had already won a reputation for its orthopedic work throughout Africa. For this hospital and its staff, emergency meant a readiness to accommodate more than 600 people every night. The hospital was already training nurses and doctors. An infant nation, taking painful first steps, receives friendly assistance until it is strong. In these massive sorrow spots of the world, the church is set. Her ministries of mercy bring consolation and comfort to thousands. But her charity is not enough. The unanswered question is posed not merely by their hunger for bread, but their hunger for life in lands where freedom, justice, and peace have sway. Will the churches and peoples that have hastened to their aid remain to establish their cause? Continue to allow the ugly open sores on our world to mock our claims of faith in action? These are the questions our gallery of faces is asking. None of them alike, yet all of them alike. For they are hungry faces, hungry for more than bread, hungry for more than charity. Hungry for their right to live as men.
Observations on this part?
Well, the music is very dire. You know, this mm-hmm. is really serious, awful, terrible.
Do you still see films like this, essentially? Or this kind of a pitch on the question of helping the third world?
Yes.
Yeah. From which quarters?
The Children's Relief Organization.
World Relief?
Yeah. But there's one that's Children's International, that's it. Yeah. On TV is always showing.
Sally Struthers.
Yeah.
I think there's a sense in which people won't be able to see the need unless they show people in very dire crisis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it probably is partially true. That's that too bad, because it surely doesn't give opportunity to show how there's partnership with the people, with us, and right. with them. What it does is it shows food them up.
Mm-hmm. What does it do to them? Let's not let this point go. Dan?
Yeah, well, I'm just curious. As we just had Patricia from...
Patricia Larson?
Larson.
Yeah.
And she really pointed out how the pictures now, what we use are pictures of people with dignity, mm-hmm. health. You know, it's a completely different kind of appeal. So it
right.
preserves the dignity of the people we're helping.
Right. Are you following this difference between this film and what Dan just said? Mm-hmm. I got to tell you something. I was at a meeting. There's a guy named Michael Marin who wrote a book called Road to Hell. And he was a care worker and a Catholic Relief Services worker, unfortunately, because I like CRS, and a couple other places. And he's been on the talk show circuit trashing the aid agencies, the big aid agencies. And CARE has been very upset by him and has had crisis meetings at top-level management. And I was in one of the meetings where the agencies were discussing Michael Marin's campaign to sell his book, because he does have some abuses to explain. And the person from CARE said, "We've tested hope, and it doesn't sell."
we've tested all. This sells, you know, this mm-hmm. objectionable though we may find it, this is the way to raise money for relief overseas. This is what World Vision does. This is what Christian Children's Fund does some of the time. Compassion International or Christian
Children
International. I mean, we can name some names. They do some good work with the money they raise. That's not necessarily to be questioned in the same breath. But I know that in Africa, this kind of way of portraying the continent makes people incredibly angry. And we don't even know how angry it makes them, I think. And what does it do to us? What is it, what, like somebody said here, that, you know, to me, did you see God in this film? I've got a fridge magnet for anybody who's spotted God in this film.
He brought more than one.
I got another purpose for him. But some great people, obviously, some of those faces, some of the places they went to film. Do you agree with me that this idea of seeing God in a stranger doesn't quite work when you do this? Because you haven't given them the image of God that they own, that they have. You've turned them into something that it has one dimension, and that is need. And the more flies on their faces, there's an expression, FOB, flies on baby, you know, an FOB photo. The more it might work to raise money. And I think we have a big crisis because our hunger appeal in our church isn't doing very well. We're good on people's dignity, but we're not good on raising the money we think we need to help them. Yes?
I had half a cousin that was a missionary to Libya for over 20 years. He was a doctor. Mm-hmm. And his philosophy from the old-time missionaries that went over there and were trying to convert them by preaching to them all the time was, mm-hmm. if you don't feed them, if you don't heal them, mm-hmm. all the words mean absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
That you first have to have a full belly and a healthy body, mm-hmm. and then you can stand on your own and go from there. Mm-hmm. So, in a way, this appeal for food, yes, to us it looks crass because we have food in that situation. But if you're over there and you don't have food and you are hurting, mm-hmm. you can't think above that next step.
Right. This is really an important point. Is it worth feeding them to show them like that? Is that sort of what you're saying?
In a way, if you don't feed them to begin with, they don't care what kind of dignity you want to put on them. Those actual people that you're taking pictures of.
Mm-hmm.
They're hungry and they're hurting. And if you can't solve that problem, no matter how much dignity, I mean, they after they get above that point, they see this film, yes, they would be angry or upset.
There's the two sides.
But if you don't feed them and save them and heal that part of them,
mm-hmm. I hear you.
They don't care.
Mark?
I just want to say another perspective on this film is that we've been sort of situating it in the context of images and words by comparison to today's sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
If you located that in other things being produced in 1962, mm-hmm. at the height of the Cold War, I mean, we're talking Cuban Missile Crisis, we're
right.
talking just the election that really turned on deepening, everything was east or west, and
yeah.
you, everything else you would have seen in that period, or not everything, but 90% of it, would have been much more the communist menace kind
right.
of thing. And so in some ways, I think the church deserves a lot of credit for the tone of that film, because relative to other things in 1962, it's really quite progressive.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be, in other words, too hard on mm-hmm. what the church was doing then, based on, you know, sensibilities 35 years later and all that we've
right.
learned.
No, that's excellent perspective.
And unfortunately, it was more effective than we are today at reasonable.
That's the dilemma we have, honestly. If money is important, you know.
It's not the people who are angry at being portrayed like that.
I don't know.
How do you know?
They don't see it.
Well, not in my experience, and I don't know about your experience.
Well, I want to say something. Right this very minute, North Korea is on the brink of a famine that could... A third of the country, there's 24 million North Koreans, 8 million of them are at serious risk of famine, and 4 million are at very, very serious risk of famine. They're down to 100 grams in the official distribution system, 100 grams per person per day. That's a handful of rice cooked. That's your ration for the day. And there's some northern provinces up near the northern border of China that the government isn't even trying to supply even 100 grams to. And yet they're saying to us, we had a group in there 2 weeks ago, they're saying, we are not going to beg in front of your cameras. We are not going to be seen, they said, we're not going to be seen like Africans. So their official line is basically that their dignity is more important than their life. In a sense, that's what they're saying. And they have enough of an authoritarian system to say that. The people, you can't tell if they would agree.
Because
they,
who's saying that?
Well, the Korean Christians Federation is saying it, who are the partners that we're working through. The government certainly is. And there are many, many things that come into this. But it's really poignant when you just see Korea still torn up there, and then you think of it today. And it'd be great almost to do a session on the famine in Korea. But it's not quite as simple as to say that their government is doing that. I think we can say that we have to put pressure on their government and make it open up for aid. But do we have to make it open up to play our game of tugging heartstrings and showing people in such trouble? The question almost is, do we have to see in order to believe that some people are in trouble? You know, do we need these images on our TVs before we will give? And the North Koreans are, in a way, calling that bluff in a horrible, potentially a horrible way. Because so far, the aid that's getting in there is about... They need 1 million tons this year. If the World Food Program is aided by the governments of the world, they'll get 200,000 tons. They're still 800,000 tons short. And this is a slow famine. They've had floods, hail in 94, bad floods in 95, bad floods in 96. And their capacity to feed themselves is going down and down. People are living on roots. They're living on grass. You don't see animals in the field because they've eaten them. Older people are not eating so young people can eat. But it's a slow famine. It's not... The net intake of food in Korea right now is half the level of what it was in Ethiopia at the height of the famine in 84. Only half the level. But it's spread among the whole people, almost. And so everybody's losing weight. Everybody who's disadvantaged. I think the advantaged people are still doing, you know, enough to get by. You see, I have a video from there. I could show you some scenes. Shot 2 weeks ago. And the people on the street in Pyongyang look fine. Most of the people in the video look fine. But can we respond to a famine that we can't see, when by every indication there is one? This is almost the question we face here. And it's very close to home with us, because LWR spends all of its time trying to relate to people in the image of God, and as partners, as equal children of God. But that is a lousy fundraising tactic, and I'm so happy I'm a journalist and not a fundraiser. You know, because I'm interested in these stories and in bringing this good and bad news from overseas. But can you raise money with it? I'm not sure. Some comments. Dorothy?
It makes me think about the role of images in our culture and how we need to see things on TV in all kinds of areas of life. And how in some cases that has been probably transformative for us in good ways, like the civil rights movement, the treatment of children and the demonstrations from the real turning point, and the Vietnam War, where we could see the images and therefore we would change our hearts.
Right.
Shots from the moon, you know, whatever it is. Now there's such a, there's so many images, you know, bombarding us all the time. It's hard to be sensitive to them and really.
Another twist on this image question is, we don't get any news from Africa. You know, if you've been there, you know it's an incredible, dynamic, wonderful place. You come back here and I watch the news. I channel surf to try to find international news on TV at night. Evening news. There isn't any. The only time an African can get on our tube is when he's dying. In our system. It's the only time Africans can get on our... Something horrible has to happen there. We think it's a basket case of a continent. And it isn't. It's got troubles. It's had some horrible things happening. But by and large, to paint the whole thing with one brush...
Well, and mostly supported by the East-West conflict.
I think that's our habit. Right now the conflict's gone. Can we see it in a new light, you know? Other comments? I've got, just when I reiterate some of the narrative, well, we're almost done here. There's one line there. The little cesta that lands and they hand out little boxes of food, that is about 100 miles from the film on Angola that we made. And this is from 1962, and here we are filming food distribution in Angola in 1996. That's about 100 miles away. A woman there pointed it out to me when she saw some footage we used. And what it says at that point, nations of the world rush in to relieve a disaster they were powerless to prevent and which all too soon they will forget. There are two assumptions in that sentence. And I think they're both wrong. They aren't powerless to prevent it, in a sense. They can do quite a bit more than we tend to do.
Well, in fact, they caused it.
Yeah. Do they feed off each other? If we feel we're powerless to prevent it, are we then enabled in our forgetting of it? Much of this relief work was only possible because the church was already there. That is a true statement, which is still true. Before we all got excited about or depressed about the genocide in Rwanda, the genocide was long done. When those people walked over into Zaire and started dying in front of the cameras, that was well after perhaps a million people had been killed. The killing started on April 6th. On April 12th, the Lutheran World Federation had two trucks with relief supplies to help a group of refugees who were Tutsis fleeing the Hutu extremist killers who had fled to Tanzania 6 days after it happened on April 12th. You and I got motivated about it on July 15th. And the killing took place in 100 days after in 8 weeks after April 6th, and was all done by then. But the church was already there. They were able to help. They were on the spot. CNN flew into Goma on an LWF Hercules. Never mentioned LWF, Lutheran World Federation. Sort of trying to figure out a way to charge them, you know, for the flight in the future. They have to mention us if they fly on our airplane. But meanwhile, you know, groups, we feel a little bit protective, defensive, because groups like World Vision have no qualms about blowing their own horn in a big, big way.
Yeah.
And raising hundreds of millions of dollars through methods. I've seen late night TV specials from World Vision which aren't that different from this. They just aren't that different from this. Final quote. Can you remember? Did anybody have a final quote? I think I would just reiterate the point that for me, this is a Glimpses of God series, but a show like this, which deals with so much suffering, in my opinion, does a pretty poor job of showing us the God in each of us and in these people, even though there's some great photography and so on. And I think it, because it falls down on that issue that we've pointed at, and it's a real dilemma. We can sit here and be ivory tower critics and not have the money to help. And then what do we say? And in a way, that's the dilemma of our church. Our church is not driven to reach out to the world that is portrayed here, our Lutheran church. I said the other night, and there were a Mennonite listening, 250,000 Mennonites in this country do more of this kind of work than 7 million Lutherans. Because justice and peace are right up front in their faith. And they make this top priority.
They make it live to the church and their communities.
Mm-hmm.
we send out little envelopes and talk about it a little.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming. The discussion can continue. We do something similar tomorrow with, I think it's Rwanda. No, on Monday. With something called Turn in the Road. When Lutherans decided they couldn't just help in Europe, but they had to help in the wider world. And that film is from 1953, I believe. Thank you very much.